Welcome to the Rooney Report. Today we have with us Archbishop Bernard Hebda. Archbishop, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Russ. I appreciate the invitation.
So Archbishop, I'd like for you to share with us how the Catholic Church has promoted human dignity throughout, you know, the ages, you know, since its beginning.
Yes. Well, we have such a strong theology of the dignity of each human life, really based on the fact that Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, would take on human flesh. So somehow or another, it shows a value in everything that's created, no matter how weak, no matter how strong. And so the church approaches the world with that real conviction that each life is sacred, that it's a gift from God. And when we begin from that perspective, then it has great ramifications for our social teaching and how it is that we treat moms and dads, how we think that families are important, how it is that we do the best that we can to reach out to those who are in need, recognizing in them that that beautiful dignity of each human life.
Yeah, and I think, you know, without that recognition, I think it was Dostoevsky that said, without God, anything is permitted. And if you don't have, say, these moral absolutes, you can see what, you know, has happened with tyrants and just tragedies in history.
Yes. No, you hope, though, that even somebody who doesn't have faith, that when they look at a newborn child, or as they look at somebody who's in their last moments of life, that they still see a real gift.
Right.
Even if they don't recognize that it's from God. But certainly those of us who believe that we have a God who has a plan, a God who creates us for a purpose, then certainly we're going to respect each human life.
Right. And those who don't believe in God still, we believe, have the natural law. So they do recognize.
Absolutely. That's how God creates us, to be able to listen to that voice of conscience within us.
Mm-hmm. So Archbishop, I think we're living in a time, and thinking you'll agree, that the younger generation, the millennials and people younger than you and I, have really started to become more involved in the pro-life movement. And I interviewed Sean Carney recently, and what he's done is just amazing, you know, reaching people throughout the world.
I think that's a real shot in the arm to the rest of the church as well, is recognizing that important teaching about the dignity of each human life is something that's resonating in young hearts. And they bring to that such great energy, new ways of approaching and communicating. And that's been very helpful for the pro-life movement as well. But you think of a group like Students for Life, and you realize they're able to touch people. They're able to communicate the gospel of life, whether they call it that or not,
right.
But in a way that's convincing for their peers. And it's when you go to the March for Life and you see all of the young people who are there, yeah. You realize that the culture is changing.
Mm-hmm. So we have a unique opportunity today. We're here at St. Thomas, University of St. Thomas, and we have a couple students who will be here shortly. First will be Kate and then Peter. And so I'm going to sign off now, and then you'll be able to spend some time with both Kate and Peter.
My name is Kate Spezia, and I'm the president of the Students for Life Club here at St. Thomas. I got into the pro-life movement because I was raised by a lawyer and a scientist. I was raised to love truth, and that applied to my Catholic faith, and it applied to how I looked at life itself. So coming into the university, I knew I wanted to further truth. I wanted to spread a gospel of truth and a gospel of life. And this is how I'm doing it. And Peter's my vice president.
Hello, I'm Peter. I'm the vice president of Students for Human Life. I became involved in the pro-life movement at a very young age when my mom would take me to marches. And now that I've kind of grown into my own age, I've decided to carry on her activities and really carry on the message. When I came to the university, I wasn't sure how active the pro-life field would be here. But I, as time went by, I could tell that it was very active. And I'm a sophomore now, and my freshman year, I became a member of the board. And now I'm the vice president, and I work on projects with Kate, and we help facilitate club activities, and we have a good time.
I'm Catherine Diebel. I'm the faculty advisor for the Students for Human Life Club, which is an honor. I teach in the philosophy department, and for me, as for them, part of being involved in a pro-life club is just the witness of my parents and my family. So I'm very grateful for that intellectual and also spiritual formation. For myself, I think that the best rational arguments are in defense of human life, and I think that the joy of the pro-life movement, as well as just the sheer reason that leads us to know the dignity of human beings, is something that we need to share and defend.
Archbishop, thank you again so much for being here. Peter and I are so excited to be representing Students for Human Life at St. Thomas. I have a big group, actually. We've been growing our club, and there's a lot of good things happening here. It's difficult, but it's good. And we're so excited again to just be here with you. And we're wondering, first of all, we have not been in the pro-life movement long. We're fairly young, the group I lead. And we're wondering how you've seen the culture change and how you've seen the pro-life movement change in response to it in specific ways.
Yes, thanks. Great question, Kate. Certainly when it seems like to me that not long after Roe versus Wade, I was still in high school at the time, and when we went on those first pro-life marches in Washington, it was strongly a Catholic event, huh? Mm. And it certainly has broadened since then, and we get so much support from our evangelical brothers and sisters who also recognize the dignity of each human life. But one of the things that we also see is that we really benefited from those who were able to speak about science convincingly, those who were able to address the issues in our society convincingly, and coming to recognize the life issue as just one part of that puzzle, very important part that really gives color to everything else that we're doing. But it's wonderful to see so many young people, so many thinking people, in terms of those from universities, those who are really interested in how it is that we improve our society, and seeing that the life issue is part of that.
Absolutely. And the church has always been a strong supporter of the family, as you mentioned.
Yes.
And I guess I'm wondering how the church has changed in strengthening the family, changed in strengthening the pro-life movement in response to these cultural changes.
Yes. So I think that it's more of a challenge now, probably, even than it would have been 40 years ago, because there are more difficulties with family and society. Mm. And so the church really has to respond, really has to continue to promote sound teaching about the importance of family, and that parents are the first educators of their children. But in a way also that we're willing to give support to, especially to young families who are faced with a pregnancy and who are considering what that's going to mean for their lives. And so you see in so many of the pregnancy support centers now wonderful ways in which they're teaching life skills, mm-hmm. in which they're helping not only the mom but also the dad to recognize this importance of human life, how it is that the community might be of support to them as they face some of the issues that they consider most daunting, most challenging. Mm-hmm. And so I think as the church tries to respond to that bigger picture and trying to energize and mobilize families in our pews to be of assistance to young couples who have learned that they're about to have a child.
Yeah, absolutely. And even down to the diocese level, how have you seen the forwarding of the culture of life?
Yes.
In specific ways.
So certainly every year we really promote for our teenagers, mm-hmm. The March for Life in Washington, D.C. Obviously coming from Minnesota, that's quite a drive in a bus.
Absolutely.
And yet it's an opportunity for our young people to come to learn more about the issues that are involved, mm-hmm. to recognize that they're able to support one another in promoting a culture of life. And so I'm thrilled I get to go this year. Bishop Cousins and I switch off. So I'll be in Washington this year, but I think that's something certainly that we promote. We also try to encourage our young people to think about ways in which they might be of assistance to a young family and mm-hmm. and help them to understand the resources that are available in our area. And we're really blessed here with so many great pregnancy resource centers.
Yeah, absolutely. The cities have a lot to offer. I'm from Chicago area. We have a lot to offer. It's difficult once you get into rural areas. I also study biology, so I know that about medicine as well. How do you think, even like in rural areas, the church can support?
Yes, I was just at a dinner that was supporting a pregnancy center in North Branch. So it's a much more rural area. But it was interesting because it tends to be that in our rural areas, families are already strong.
Yeah.
And so you have a lot of families that are willing to step up and to help a young couple, to share their stories. You know, there are times when a young couple can think, I have no options.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet when they're able to speak with those who might be just a little bit older than they are, they're able to recognize how it is that God works even in challenging circumstances, it's then that they're able to make good decisions. And so I'm finding that even in our rural areas, there's a strong pro-life culture and a real willingness to help young moms and dads.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Peter has a couple questions
for you
as well.
Thank you, Kate.
Yeah.
Well, hello, Archbishop.
I'm hello, Peter
Thompson. It's nice to meet you again. I'm the Vice President of Students for Human Life here on campus. I'm Kate's assistant. I'd like to start with a question about, as an advocate, particularly as a male advocate for the pro-life cause, the most common attack that I hear towards myself and my peers is that the pro-life cause is anti-women and that we don't care about women's health and we don't care about the sanctity and women's dignity in general. How do you think is the best way to ensure that we can shed the mantra of being anti-women and let people know what we're really about is that we're about protecting not only the child but also the mother and ensuring that all entities involved have the same dignity that is given to them?
That's the $64,000 question, Peter, and certainly it's something we have to work towards. I think that your peers, women, need to know that there are men who are supportive of them as women and who want the best for them. And so to the extent that we're able to make sure that that's what we're saying, that our rhetoric is authentic, that we're really speaking about the dignity of each human person in a way that respects the dignity of the mom, in a way that shows that we understand the pressures that a young mom might be under, I think that's going to make all the difference. I think it really is important to have women who are able to speak to those issues, but I think for the real truth and for the breadth of the dialogue, we need to have young men like you who are able to articulate that in a very positive way that emphasizes the importance of family, that emphasizes support, and that emphasizes empathy or understanding. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that answer, and I have to say I agree with it. In another sense, how do you think that the role of the university in the pro-life movement should play out? How can our faculty, our staff, particularly our administration, how can they ensure that whatever the University of St. Thomas is doing, we're protecting the dignity of human life and we're ensuring that all humans are protected? And then in another sense, how do you think that more specifically the university student, what should their role be in the pro-life movement?
Yes, great questions. Certainly, we're blessed to be at a Catholic university where we can talk about these things even from a faith perspective, and I think that's hugely important. And to know that we have professors who are here that are able to speak about the importance of life even from a faith perspective, so not just in philosophy and theology, but to have a biologist who's able to teach about the beauty of life, or who's able to see in the pattern of God's creation the hand of a loving God, be able to give testimony in his own life or her own life about how the Lord has led them through struggles and difficulties, I think is tremendous. Certainly we're blessed at a Catholic university also to have campus ministry that's able to support those efforts, that are able to help young people who are trying to find ways of living out their faith, to consider how it is that the pro-life support could be a way of offering the opportunity to really put our faith into action, what we say we believe about human life, what we believe about our identity, what we believe about God. I think that that's really a blessing to have campus ministers who can do that as well. That also certainly gives a lot of responsibility to you and your peers, to the students. And I think ultimately, your witness on life is going to be more convincing for many of your peers than what they might be hearing from an administrator or a bishop or a professor. I think to be able to see the university as a place of true dialogue, where we're able to speak about what it is that we're learning in each of those disciplines in a respectful way, gives us that opportunity of really helping people to come to recognize the truth about God's creation. That's the magnificent thing, and we see that in so many young people responding to the pro-life message, is that we know that God has created us to choose life. And so down deep, there's something within us that knows that. And so if we're able to help our young people to see that and to respond to what's already been placed in their hearts, I think that gives us the opportunity to really change the culture. You know, we had just recently, we celebrated the canonization of Pope Paul VI, who spoke so beautifully about family life, who spoke so beautifully about the opportunities that were given to collaborate with God in the work of creation. I think that to be able to use some of his teachings, certainly St. John Paul was another one who was very tied in to what young people think, and often young people resonate with the truth that he proclaimed as well. But to be able to speak as St. John Paul did about the importance of a culture of life rather than a culture of death. So often young people see faith as being a series of no's, what they can't do. But if we're able to put it in that positive perspective of really desiring to build a culture of life, who wouldn't want to choose that? Who wants death over life, right? So to be able to help your peers, to be able to help your colleagues to see that is hugely important.
Faith is a series of no's. I've never heard that before, but it's interesting. I myself am Catholic, and a lot of people in our organization, Students for Human Life, are Catholic. However, a lot of the people that we're trying to reach out to and connect with, they're not Catholic. In your opinion, what is the best way to balance, in a sense, our Christian views with our pro-life views that are not based on our faith as much as they are on science and logic? And how can we best reach these people while trying to convert them to the pro-life cause, but not come off as heavy-handed and overreaching Catholic beliefs and trying to force our beliefs upon them?
Yes, great question as well. I think a little bit, if you can give witness in your life to where God makes a difference, even without going into the details of Catholicism or any other form of Christianity, even just to be able to show in your life that believing in God has made a difference is going to have an impact on your peers, whether or not they recognize that at first. So that's the first thing to kind of keep in mind. The second is to be able to focus on human experience. I know there are a lot of people here that study philosophy at the university, and St. John Paul was an adherent of a branch of philosophy called phenomenology. So somehow or another, to look at human experience, and that's something that's shared by people regardless of their faith. So to be able to speak to the issues of human experience, obviously from your perspective it would be with the faith dimension, but that isn't what you need to articulate, but it helps you to see the reality of the experience, then gives you an opportunity to enter into discussion with somebody of a different faith or who has no faith at all. So I think to be able to focus on human solidarity, to focus on human experience, while at the same time being personally enriched by the gift of faith, gives you that opportunity to find some common ground for dialogue that's going to have an impact. But it is a challenge for sure, but I've run into lots of people in my life of no faith or of different faiths who strongly believe in the church's pro-life teaching because they've recognized that on their own. It's something that God has placed in our hearts, so we have to try to help people to discover that, to uncover that.
I know that Kate touched on this briefly, but it seems to me that in culture today, and there's very specific examples, things like the Alfie Evans case, where a young child was not allowed to leave the hospital,
yes.
the Alder Day Hospital, despite the fact that his parents, who I believe should be able to make the final decisions, wanted to take him and leave. But he was not allowed to do that, and he passed away in that hospital. And then there's smaller gestures, such as an advertisement about advertising contraceptives that talks about, would you rather choose this, a pacifier, or would you rather choose this, a night out with your friends? And it seems to me that the culture is shifting towards a sense that children are a burden. They are just there to slow you down. They're not going to give you the opportunities in life that you want to have. How do you think that we can shift the culture away from that and back towards the knowledge that we have that children are always a gift, regardless of the circumstance they're born into or whatever the case may be?
I don't think that's the authentic culture of young people. I really believe that young people see the value of family and life. And it's Madison Avenue or others who are trying to convince them that there's another joy. I had the opportunity, it was a real privilege to be involved in campus ministry many years ago. And one of the things that I saw was that the young people had a real hunger to figure out how it is that happy moms and dads can be happy, right? So when they would see a family that would come for Mass at our Newman Center, they were intrigued by that. They wanted to see how it is that they find happiness. So whether it be in terms of marriage, how important is marriage? There are forces in society would say that marriage isn't important anymore either, huh? But I think that down deep we're created in a way that really knows that there's a plan for us and that marriage and family are part of that. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways in which we're getting happiness that goes beyond something than the joy of a weekend, huh? But I think it is a challenge, but there's an authenticity in the response of young people that we have to uncover.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. That's all the questions I have for you today.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Archbishop Hebda, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Diebel.
I had a question for you about end-of-life issues,
yes.
In particular euthanasia. So from what I've seen in terms of data, often it seems that someone at the end of life who's considering euthanasia considers a loss of autonomy to affect his or her own dignity. How can we combat that seeming despair with hope?
Yes, that's certainly a challenging question, but it's not impossible either. You know, if we're able to help people at that point in their own lives, see the broader picture. So maybe remind them of times in their own life when they were providing care to somebody that might not have been completely autonomous, whether it be a child, whether it be their own parents, and how important that was for them and how there was dignity in life even in those moments, that might be helpful. The other part I think that's huge is really to be able to communicate to the person how important they are to you personally, right? And so often a person doesn't see that. And they're worried about how their illness or their condition is a burden on their family, on their loved ones, on their friends. And so to be able to speak to them heart to heart about their value to you might help to change the calculus a little bit on those kinds of decisions. But I think to try to offer that broader picture, to speak about how it is that God has a plan for us and how there have been times in life, if you know them well enough, to be able to point to where God revealed that plan in some way, trying to encourage them to put their trust in that God who's loved them from the moment they were created.
Thank you. Maybe along those lines and in connection with something that you had said to Peter earlier, how do we articulate just the beautiful good that can be so motivating to someone and can give so much peace? So you were talking about a happy family,
yes.
as being a goal and something that is worthy of pursuit, right? That you would want such a beautiful good for oneself. How can we help people to know I am worthy, right? I am worthy of love. I am worthy of other people's care. I'm worthy even for other people to make sacrifices for me.
Yes. No, I think a lot of it is witness. And, Paul the Sixth spoke about that. Now St. Paul the Sixth, about the importance of giving witness in our age. And so I think even just for others to be able to see the way in which you care for your husband, or a husband cares for his wife, the way that you care for children or for family, the way that you listen to students. All of those communicate in a very powerful way your understanding of the dignity of each human life. And to be able to share those things as well. I think there's a tendency to maybe cut off that part of our life from our professional lives. And yet, I think to be able to share that there are other things in life besides publishing, and the joy that comes from being in a family, being part of a family, is something that sustains you, for example, in your academic life and your professional life. But to be able to share that, in your case, with students or with colleagues, because I'm convicted that what you said is true, that people are created to want happiness, and the Lord gives us a path for that. It's just so often it's confusing. So for them to see people that are really find happiness in giving themselves generously to the Lord and trusting that the Lord's going to provide, I think that's what's going to make them wake up and to reconsider some of the false understandings of life that are promoted by some in our society.
Okay, so you are loved and you are worthy of happiness. That's a pretty good message.
Absolutely.
Well, for me, working with students helps me to remain hopeful and energetic, and really it gives me hope for the future that a culture of life is an option and something that is being actively worked for. What do you find to be a source of hope in, say, the last 10, 15 years? Where do you see hope or successes in the pro-life movement?
Great. Allow me first to thank you for what you do for that. Because I think it's really related to where I see the hope. I mean, when I encounter, and no matter what parish I go to, we find vibrant young families where they're really striving to pass on the faith to their kids, where they're really trying to create an environment in which others, too, beyond their nuclear family, are going to understand God's love. I think that's hugely important, and for me, that's a great source of hope. To see that take place on a university campus, for me, is even more important. You know, I think for our students, to be able to see those who are involved in the intellectual apostolate as being strongly committed to life, I think speaks volumes, and really opens up opportunities for young people to reconsider some of the things that they're hearing that aren't true, and gives them that opportunity to enter into a deeper discussion that helps to get to the root of who we are. So I'm very grateful for the work that you do with the students here on campus for life, but also the way in which you're able to witness to the joy that comes from trusting in God's plan for human life. And for me, that is hugely inspiring. So I'm grateful to you, grateful to your students, and to all of those who support your work here at the university.
Thank you so much, Archbishop.
You're welcome.
And thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
We're pro-life, and love saves lives.
We provide the legal defense to the people who really are the last line of defense to these women and these babies. That's why Life Legal does what they do, because someone like Father James Linton isn't going to be able to hire a huge firm and pay thousands of dollars to litigate a criminal case, but Life Legal is able to do that because of the support of our donors and that people find what we do to be important.